With many schools opening or about to open around the country this time of year, teachers everywhere are firming up curricula. As teacher Daniel Ferry prepares for his class, he can't help but glance back to the previous year.
When people ask how I pick plays for our school drama club, I tell them I look for plays with cavalry charge potential. Some directors look for plot, others look for character development or emotional impact. But with 200 middle schoolers in the club, I look for plays with parts. Lots of them. Expandable parts, like The Wizard of Oz. Besides being a good story, it has no limits to the number of munchkins, winged monkeys, and Oz people that can sweep across the stage in our middle school charges of the light opera brigade. We'd been rehearsing for The Wizard since late January. By spring break, the kids had their lines memorized, mostly, and we were sailing into production week better prepared than we'd ever been. Our opening night performance was to begin at 7, and we had scheduled a run-through at 3, just to touch up, to smooth things out before the big night. The run-through began tepid, and it got ugly. By the munchkin scene, I was getting worried. The lollipop gilders kept goosing the munchkins with their lollipops, and the munchkins fluffed their lines, forgot their cues, refused to smile or to even move when they sang. Ding dong, the witch is dead became a dirge. Ding dong, the witch is dead. The munchkins were definitely not being cute. They could have passed for very short existentialists, cast in a Sorbonne lab school production of The Wizard of Ennui. And it got worse. Dorothy looked bored, the Scarecrow had the flu, and the Oz people were rioting backstage. At 5 o'clock, my co-director walked over, shell-shocked. She put her hand on my shoulder, started to say something, then thought better of it, shrugged, and walked away. I caught sight of the wizard's balloon. If it hadn't been a cardboard prop, I'd have hijacked it to Kansas myself. Some things you just have to take a deep breath and live through. By 6:40, most everybody was fed, costumed, made up, kind of settled down and somewhere near their places. I left the stage, nodded for the ushers to open the doors, then sat down and waited for the curtain, feeling like a bowler who had tripped just as he'd released the ball. I sat, waiting for the clunk, 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 gutter. Then the curtain opened. The narrator read as Dorothy led Toto through the audience and up on stage. Dorothy walked with an eager grace, and Toto pranced rather smartly behind. When Auntie M told Miss Gulch she couldn't tell her what she'd been waiting 30 years to tell her, because after all she was a Christian woman, I swear we could hear the fire in her eyes. The crew got a standing ovation for their tornado effects, and when the curtain came up on the munchkin scene, the crowd gasped at, well, their cuteness. And when they sang Ding Dong, we knew darn well the witch was dead. Which old witch? The one whose cackle scared three little kids so much their parents had to take them out in the hall. That's which witch. After Dorothy and Toto had danced off down the brick road to meet the Scarecrow, I slipped backstage and caught my co-director's eye as she was supervising the scenery change. She looked at me, shrugged, and mouthed, "Where in the heck did this come from?" I shrugged back. Mouthed, "Darn if I know." Then I went back to my seat and enjoyed the rest of the show.
Teacher Daniel Ferry comes to us by way of Chicago Public Radio.